Today's show is sponsored by Calamos Investments. Here's Anna DeVlantis hosting the John Williams Show.
Anna DeVlantis in for John Williams. Yes, I am. I'm here today for John. He's back tomorrow, and it is time for the noon business lunch. We begin with Elise Glink, owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves, host of This Week in Wealth with Tom Fortino, right here on WGN Radio. How you doing, Elise?
Oh, just fine. Nice to be back.
I got to tell you, I get a headache trying to figure out what's going on with the market. I got so excited on Friday. I'm like, we got some jobs. Every sector is hiring. This is good, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's terrific, right? I mean, companies are fighting for workers, and they're raising their rates, which is great. People's wages are going up. The problem is that inflation's going up even faster. So you're feeling like maybe you're not getting ahead, and that's a problem.
Mm-hmm. I think we all are feeling that for sure. One of the things I want to ask you about, Elise, is home sales are getting canceled at the highest rate since the start of the pandemic. I saw that headline.
Yeah, this is a new report out this morning from Redfin. Redfin is a big broker. They do a lot of discount brokerage. They're in many places across the country. They're here in Chicago. And what's ending up happening is that interest rates, mortgage interest rates, are rising so quickly that before people can lock them in or maybe thinking they're going to go down a little bit, they're going up even higher. And so the higher the mortgage interest rates goes, the less affordable your house is. So as home prices have been going up and mortgage rates are going up, home buyers are finding that in a very nasty surprise, they can't really afford the mortgages, and then they're getting turned down from them. So then they go back to the sellers and they say, hey, we're not getting approved for these loans. What can you do for us? And the sellers are saying, I can cancel this deal. And so that's what's happening.
Hmm. So they're holding strong. They're holding firm, the folks who are trying to sell their homes right now. It doesn't seem like they're wiggling with the price.
Well, they are, right? So that was a different study. As people are falling out of contract, we are starting to see home prices go down. And it's a little bit anecdotal at the moment, and we're not seeing it happen everywhere yet. It's not a big mass thing, but certainly we're starting to see cracks in the firmament, as you might, might want to put it. So I think that sellers are starting to get more realistic. We are seeing them lower their purchase prices, and we are seeing more homes go on the market, even in places like the North Shore, where we had, you know, in Glencoe and Winnetka and Highland Park, maybe a tenth of the normal number of homes for sale. And now we're seeing, you know, double or triple that low number. So still not a normal number yet, not a balanced market, but it's moving in that direction.
Yeah, not all that long ago, you and I were talking about multiple bids on homes on the North Shore, and you couldn't, you had to be the most attractive buyer. You had to stand out from the pack, and maybe that's not so much the case today.
Yeah, we're still seeing some multiple offers, which is great. Mostly what we're seeing is a strategy for pricing your house below the known market. So if you think your house is worth $500,000, you might go in at 475 just to get it under that $500,000 mark, just to spark a lot of interest and get everybody focused on your house and then get it sold quickly.
What would you say about folks who are in the market to buy a home right now? And they say, you know what, the mortgage rates are pretty high. Do you think that they're only going to go higher, and just waiting isn't going to be the right strategy unless you want to sit it out for the long haul? How would you address that?
Well, I think you want to look at other kinds of mortgages. So what we're seeing is tremendous growth again in adjustable rate loans, ARMs, A-R-M-S. So why are we seeing that? Well, the mortgage rates, which have dropped a bit over the last week, they're fluctuating. They were over 6%. And now they're around 5.3%, but an adjustable rate mortgage would start in the mid 4% range. So still higher than 2.6% of last year. And certainly there's some additional risk, but it does give buyers a little more flexibility. Now, before you get all nervous about the risk that, you know, your interest rate could get bumped up, I'll tell you that a lot of people, myself included, have used adjustable rate mortgages as a strategy for always paying a little bit under the market. So for the amount of time we had a loan, which was, I think, close to 20 years before we finally paid it off, every time interest rates dropped, we refinanced again, also using an adjustable rate loan, until we got a loan at like 2.6%. And then we're like, okay, we're done. This is a really low interest rate. So you may be able to try that kind of a strategy to make the home more affordable.
Sounds good. That is good advice, Elise. As always, hang on a second. We've got more to talk with you about. Elise Glink, owner of Think Glink Media here on WGN. Let's check in with Ryan Burrow right now. He's got more from the newsroom. 1219, Elise Glink is here with us, owner of Think Glink Media. I saw this, Elise, and I thought, oh my word. It's a study about what it takes to be considered financially comfortable in the U.S. And they're saying somewhere between living paycheck to paycheck and owning a yacht, it's a big gap there, Americans are considered financially comfortable if they have a net worth of $774,000. But then it breaks it down by city. And get into this a little bit with us, because it's quite a variation depending on where you live.
Yeah, it really is, Anna. And it's sort of interesting because I feel, you know, and this is the whole thing that Best Money Moves is predicated on, you're the best person to say how financially stressed you are. And so you might have $300,000 in the bank and feel pretty good about that and about your retirement prospects. And somebody else would feel completely stressed about it. And where you live is certainly a big part of it. Charles Schwab does this annual Modern Wealth Survey. And what they're trying to assess is how where you live and what you actually own and what you owe versus what you own, how much it makes, how all of that plays together to make you feel comfortable. And so it's not a surprise to find out that people who are living in San Francisco need the most in terms of net worth that to feel good. So they need $1.7 million, whereas in Chicago, a little bit under $1 million, about $956,000, and you're going to feel financially comfortable. And yet, I know a lot of people for whom that number would either be so far into the stratosphere of more than they need, and so many people for whom that wouldn't even be close to enough. So it's kind of interesting.
It is. San Francisco, $1.7 million. New York City comes in at number two. You need $1.4 million in order to be considered financially comfortable. Chicago's just under $1 million, and then Denver was the bottom, the lowest on the list at $671,000. I think home prices is a big part of that, don't you think?
I do, and it's interesting to me that Denver was on that list with $671,000, because Denver is one of the cities that has really changed the most in the last, let's say, 10 to 15 years, where if you go to that city, and I was just there a few weeks ago for a business trip, looking around and you see all of the cranes going up. Everywhere you look, there are cranes. They're building rental properties. They're not building homes that you can buy. They're building rental properties because people can't afford to buy in the city. And the land has gotten so expensive there that people are having trouble figuring out if they're even going to be able to rent those places. So what's happening is transplants from California and other higher cost areas are coming to Denver, and it's really pushing up the amount that people spend on their housing. Chicago, on the other side, we remain a great deal for housing costs. I know it feels expensive, but if you compare what you can buy here and the amount that you get for your money, it's far less than any of the list, of these other cities that are on this list.
You know, I've run into some people from New York and San Francisco who've moved here, most of them for jobs and things like that, and they say, wow, it's so affordable here. I thought, well, that
right?
puts it in perspective, because we don't think that. But when you come from a place like that, it does. It puts it in perspective relative to other major cities. So it's good news.
Yeah, it is nice news, and it helps, I think, when you understand that we are such a great city. I mean, I hate to sound like a city booster here, but I really do love Chicago. You know, every single week of the summer, there's something fun going on somewhere.
So true.
And you just get these, you know, wonderful restaurants. You get really great entertainment and great culture in Chicago. And when you look around at other places, you're paying a lot more for that. And so it's very nice to be living here in Chicago.
You know, I have to agree. That is such an important point. This city is so vibrant right now. And if you haven't been downtown, you haven't been to the neighborhoods in a while, come and do it. I've been the first one to say the neighborhoods don't feel the same. Downtown didn't feel the same last year, end of last year. But it's back. I saw a line outside the Nike store over the weekend. I saw It's Sugar. You could barely get in there. My daughter's like, we got to go in there, Mom. I thought, well, wait a minute. I don't know that we can fit in that store. And it's nice to see people coming back downtown, people shopping again, taking in our festivals, taking in our neighborhoods. I just, it's such a good thing. And you're right. If that sounds like I'm cheerleading for Chicago, I am. And I wasn't always saying that before. So there you go.
Well, one thing that's going to be interesting is what's going to happen with this survey, you know, of the amount that you feel comfortable having next year. Because what we've had now is a reversal in the stock market of about 20-25%, depending on what you're invested in. And what we saw last year is a record number of millionaires were created. Most of those were created because of money people had in their 401ks, and the stock market's gone up dramatically over the last 4 or 5 years, much the way it did in the 90s. And so we hadn't had a reversal in a while. Now we're going to have one. It'll be interesting to see in next year's survey how that affects what people think they need to make themselves feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm. It will be. Another thing I want to ask you before I let you go, Elise, and appreciate your time. Unemployment rate for black women fell in June, but so did their participation in the labor force. We've been focusing a lot on participation in the labor force. A lot of changes there.
Yeah, there are. I mean, what percent of people who could work are actually working, who are of working age? That's what the labor force participation measures. And what we're seeing is that there's a real difference between the labor force participation for white women and the unemployment rate. So for white women, it's right now just under 3% with a labor force participation rate of 57.1%, really low number. Black women, we saw the unemployment rate fall to about 5.6% in June. And the labor force participation rate fell to 62%, higher than for white women. But you're seeing both of those things in tandem. And I think that that's got some people really confused about how black women are really participating. They were one of the hardest hit, women overall, hardest hit from the pandemic. Women stayed at home in droves, had to educate their kids who were sick, take care of sick family members, take care of the house. So they, in large numbers, they never went back to work. And now they are. But the labor force participation rate is something to really watch because it's, again, tracking how many people are employed or searching for work. And that number is just really low for all women in general, but particularly black women are not participating as much as they could.
Interesting stuff. Always is. Thanks, Elise Glink.
It's a pleasure, Anna.
Good talking with you. ThinkLink Media and Best Money Moves. Catch her on WGN Radio Sundays at 6:30 in the morning, along with Tom Fortino, a wealth of knowledge. We've got more coming up here. We've just heard from the state's attorney in Lake County, Eric Reinhart. He will be joining us at next half hour. He is not only responsible for prosecuting Robert Cremo III, the 21-year-old allegedly behind the shooting and the horrible situation at the Highland Park 4th of July parade, but he is also calling for changes to gun laws. Hear what Eric Reinhart has to say. He himself is from Highland Park. He's got a lot to talk about. We'll speak with him next half hour here on WGN. Right now, we're going to get to the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
We're back with more financial insights from Calamos Investments. Here's Anna DeVlantis.
Anna DeVlantis in for King John. The noon business hour continues this Monday afternoon. Here, stepping into the studio, Michael Grant, the co-CIO, head of long short strategies at Calamos Investments. How you doing, Michael?
Very well. How are you, Anna?
I'm okay. You know, hey, you've been doing this since the 1980s, and everyone's trying to figure out what the heck is going on here with the economy and where we might go next. I want to get your perspective. How do you view what we're looking at right now and all of the data coming at us?
Sure. Well, first, COVID is in the rearview mirror, but the impact of COVID, the pockmarks of COVID on the economy, will still take a couple of years to work through. And that's important because some of the confusion that we feel today is that the economic logic or the economic analysis that we've all grown up with has not adapted well to the impact of COVID. So there is something very unusual that we're going through until supply chains and employment markets can normalize from the pandemic. So that's the first key point. The second key point is that today's problem is inflation, not deflation. 90% of investors have only worked when deflation was the threat. Inflationary recessions, for example, are very different. They tend to be milder. They tend to be shorter. But that is new for most investors, and it has big implications for the investment outlook.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right about even the short-term history, if you look at in terms of being an investor. and COVID when it started, and the extreme drop in the fear in the market that turned around for this tremendous period of growth that a lot of people didn't expect, and the surge in stock prices that resulted from that, and people's 401ks went up and things went well, and now we're dealing with the high inflation. What do you need to tell people in order to position yourself for the future? What would you say someone listening right now saying, you know what, I'm not sure, I'm feeling very uncomfortable with what's going on right now?
Well, there are some basic principles that were overlooked 12 months ago. Valuations across financial assets became stupid. And we've gone from stupid to just average. So that's a good thing, right? Because investing long term at the wrong price can be very painful. Now, interestingly, after a 20% decline in the major equity benchmarks, investors have never lost money over the subsequent 5 years. Now, that might not feel good if you're in a high inflation environment because your real returns feel poor. But nonetheless, history suggests that now is a good time to be positioning yourself. What is important is that investors still avoid those stocks that don't make sense in terms of their earnings or their sales or their cash flows, because pockets of the market still have a valuation problem, and that's where you can still lose a lot of money.
You know, speaking of losing a lot of money, the tech stocks seem to get over exuberant. There's a lot of exuberance around buying them. I remember the FANG stocks that made headlines for so long, that what Facebook, Apple, Alphabet, helped me, Netflix, Google, and the others too, just the hot tech stocks. And a lot of people poured a lot of money in that direction, and they've lost a significant percentage of that this year. Would you say they're now staged to start putting some money back into those types of stocks? How do you feel about the tech sector in general?
So I think the key question is quality and quality profits earnings. And parts of the tech world have that. Many do not. So I think differentiation is critical at this point. We can look at Google and Facebook, and we can look out to next year, and we can see real earnings and cash flows that can support those businesses. Unfortunately, there's a big part of the tech world that has lost 50%, 70% of its share price in value terms, and yet still cannot be properly measured in terms of earnings and cash flow. Mm-hmm. So I think the guidance for investors is to go back to the basic principles that were the map of our industry, right? How do we get our clients to their destination? And the answer was always earnings and cash flow. And mm-hmm. investors forgot that when money became free. And what's happened the last 6 months has really refined their focus that this is a key part of our job.
Don't invest in valuations that are stupid. I want to make sure I take note of that, because I think I probably did a little of that. I probably did. Consumer spending, let's touch on that for a second. I was just remarking to Elise Glink, one of our financial experts here at WGN, that I'm walking up and down Michigan Avenue over the weekend with my family. A lot of shoppers were out. I was actually surprised. At one point, my daughter said, "It looks like a concert just let out." And I thought, wow, it has been a long time since I've seen this many people this deep on Michigan Avenue. But I just wonder what you're seeing in terms of the data. Consumer spending is one of the drivers of our economy. How are we doing? What do you notice?
So there's no question it's strong. So on Friday, we got the employment report. And wages were up 5% year over year. And employment was up 4%. So that's 9% income for consumers over the last 12 months. The nominal economy this year will grow 7, 8, 9%. Those are big, big numbers. And this explains everything that you just see. And it makes a very important point about an inflationary setting, which is that inflation of incomes is a good thing, especially for a highly levered economy like the United States, right? Because inflation boosts income. And it boosts your balance sheet. The value of your debt goes down. The value of your assets goes up. So this is why an inflation problem and inflation recessions are very different from deflation and deflationary type recessions. And it's part of the reason why I think we're getting close to an opportunity in the equity world.
Speaking of opportunities in the equity world, corporate earnings is something we have not really touched on yet, but I know Wall Street is looking at that moving forward to sort of pick out what with the how corporations might be feeling about inflation, a potential recession, and the economy. What do you think we'll see as we start to hear more about earnings?
I think the surprise is that corporate profitability is going to hold up this year. And the reason is that corporations live and eat nominal GDP, not real GDP. Right? So they benefit from the inflation we've been seeing in intermediate goods prices. So I think the corporate side of the question is healthy, and investors need to get comfortable with when inflation peaks and when the Fed's hawkish position becomes a bit more benign. I think those will be the catalysts for an improved equity setting.
We're speaking with Michael Grant. He is the co-CIO, head of long short strategies at Calamos Investments, based right here in Chicago, in the Chicago area. It's 12:43. The noon business lunch continues. Anna DeVlantis in for King John. Let's get over to Steve Grzanich. He's got the Wintrust Business Minute. Michael Grant is the co-CIO, head of long short strategies at Calamos Investments here at the noon business hour. Anna DeVlantis in for King John. Final question for you, Michael, here. Supply chains, we've heard so much about them. How are they impacting the financial markets and the financial world now? What would you say?
Well, they're important because until supply chains normalize, we can't really say the pandemic is behind us, right? This is the pockmark on the economy from the pandemic. If we go back last autumn and the Fed was telling us inflation's transitory, and it got it terribly wrong. Now, why is that? Fed's full of bright people, lots of resources, has all these fancy models. And every time it shocked its models, it always came back with the same answer, okay? 2% trend growth in the economy, 1% to 2% inflation. But those models always assume they can adjust to price. The system can adjust to price signals. And when you have a supply problem like we did through COVID, there were no price signals that could be responded to. So we cannot normalize as an economy until those supply chains normalize. Now, the good news is that if supply chains normalize over the next 12 months, which I think they are, then inflation fears are probably peaking this summer. I think the Fed can pivot to a less hawkish stance by September, and we will be surprised how quickly inflation actually goes back to trend line of 2%.
We'll end it with that positive outlook. Michael Grant, thank you. Thank you for the time today. Appreciate it. Co-CIO, head of long short strategies at Calamos Investments. We have an opportunity here in the noon business hour to speak with Lake County State's Attorney Eric Reinhart. He's calling in on a very busy day. He is the person who is tasked with the job of prosecuting the Highland Park shooter. And let's speak with him here now. Eric, are you with us? Eric Reinhart, are you there?
Yes, good afternoon.
Sorry about that. I know you're a busy guy, and we appreciate you checking in with us here. You are prosecuting Robert Cremo III, the Highland Park shooter. There certainly seems to be a lot of evidence there. Can you tell us where that case stands right now, where it is in the process?
Yes, thank you very much. I want to continue to express condolences to those who lost loved ones in the shooting, those who were injured physically, those who are affected psychologically. Highland Park and Lake County will never be the same. It is just a massive blow to this community. But I know that we are strong, and I know that we're starting the healing process, but we're not there yet, and we are going to continue to need a lot of support. And I have to thank the police and the first responders who ran towards the danger. So it's such an important part of this story. The investigation is ongoing. We are reviewing a mountain of evidence to understand how and why, which we don't fully know yet, how and why this attacker planned this premeditated killing spree against the people of Highland Park.
You know, one question that has come up, will come up, I want to ask you about is the parents and their role in this, if any role at all. Are they culpable? Did they do something wrong? Did they break the law? Do you think that your office or anyone will be charging the parents of this young man with any crime?
I don't want to go too far into the details on that. Look, people have to be watching out for their neighbors. People have to be watching out for their communities. We have to use common sense when we are analyzing what teenagers are doing. What are they, you know, what are their interests? What are they talking about? Are their friends giving school or parents warning signs? Look at all of these mass shootings. The mass shooting in El Paso, which was a racist attack on Latinos and Hispanics, I believe was an 18-year-old. The racist attack in Buffalo was another person under 21. The racist attack in Atlanta was another young person. This is an incredibly disturbing trend in the United States. It is heartbreaking, but it is preventable. And we have to all be moving in one direction to be watching out for these for danger, you know, for these types of dangerous situations. And parents bear a responsibility to try to understand what their kids are doing and to not give them assault weapons and to not help them get assault weapons or any type of weapon.
Yeah, and that's why I think a lot of people are asking, is there going to be some movement from your office to investigate that? It sounds like you're not ready to talk to about that in any detail. Let me ask you this, though. I know, Eric, you're not only prosecuting this case, but you've also been outspoken about the laws. Just about a minute left here. What is it you would change? What is it you're pushing for right now that you feel might make a difference?
Well, certainly, I think we should have an assault weapon ban. I think we should ban high-capacity magazines, but we also need to invest in the structural issues that are affecting black and brown communities and the violence that we see throughout our country and really throughout our neighborhoods. Every community deserves to feel safe. That's why prior to the Highland Park shooting, I started a gun violence prevention initiative to get outreach workers and caseworkers into all communities where gun violence was affecting people. This is massive work, but there's nothing more important in my office than trying to save lives.
Eric Reinhart, thank you for the time this afternoon. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Lake County State's Attorney there, Eric Reinhart, prosecuting Robert Cremo, the shooter, the alleged shooter in the Highland Park 4th of July parade event. It's 12:57. We're getting to the news at the top of the hour from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.